This is Digital Story Podcast number 579, April 11th, 2017. Today's theme is F28 and Be There. I'm Derek Story. One of the more interesting conversation threads during our San Francisco street photography workshop was about motivation. Our photographers would talk about periods of time where life overtook their art, and during those stretches, the camera seldom saw the light of day. On the flip side, however, it was interesting to hear from them how quickly they could build momentum once they set aside some time for their camera work. Getting there is half the battle, and how to do that is the topic of today's show. So first of all, some of you that have been around for a while may be wondering why I said F28 and Be There instead of F8 and Be There, because F8 and Be There, well, that's the original saying. And we used to use that all the time back when I was a stringer or working for the school newspaper. And basically, you set your aperture to F8, and then you show up, you press the shutter, and you're going to get some shots. But you can't get shots if you're not there. And then the F8 is just sort of, well, I don't know, it's just, you know, I think the implication on F8 and Be There is it doesn't really make any difference exactly what camera settings you have. Set it to F8, Be There, and press the shutter. Well, I changed it to F28 because a lot of things have changed since that original saying. And diffraction is one of them. Not that diffraction hasn't always been around. Diffraction is, well, it's a loss of quality that happens when the light rays going through the lens have to bend around something, such as the aperture blades. Now, when we shot film with 35 millimeter cameras, that was what we considered a full frame sensor, right? 35 millimeter piece of film. So we didn't really get diffraction, generally speaking, until F16 or maybe F11, but probably F16, something like that. Well, mirrorless cameras and micro four thirds cameras in particular have a smaller sensor. So what happens is diffraction sets in a lot earlier. Mirrorless cameras, I try not to push them past F5.6. So if I said today for our micro four thirds shooter, F8 and Be There, I'm saying, well, take a dose of diffraction with that also. And I don't really want that. Whereas F28 for a micro four thirds camera is a great aperture setting, generally very sharp with the way these cameras are designed. So I'm changing that saying to be F2.8 and Be There because I'm shooting with micro four thirds most of the time, not all the time. I have my DSLRs too, but I'm shooting with micro four thirds. I know a lot of you are, and I just don't want to dispel bad advice. Okay, anyway, see, I just start right off with a rabbit hole for you. All right, so let's get to the topic at hand here. This was an interesting conversation that we would have in the workroom during the workshop. So we had the workshop on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We actually started on Thursday night. And any of you that have ever been to one of my workshops know that it's a mix of going out and shooting and then hanging out in the workroom and doing stuff. I love both aspects of it. I do. I really do. And the chatter in the workroom is a lot of fun. So one of the themes this year that would show up in the workroom, that would surface in the workroom, was the idea of, I'm really having a good time on this workshop. I haven't been shooting as much as I would like to. And it's great to be shooting day after day after day and really getting into a groove and experimenting with some new techniques and learning stuff from my fellow photographers. And I was thinking about it, and it's different, right? When you work in a cubicle 40 hours a week, or you have, you know, one of many jobs out there, right? There's so many jobs out there. Most of them are not photography, right? Most of them are not photography. And then we have families, and we have other responsibilities. We have all this stuff. And a lot of times, all this stuff, our jobs, our families, our other responsibilities, create long periods of time where we're not shooting. And those can be tough. Those can be tough. First of all, we're missing out on something that we really enjoy. Second, we lose some momentum. Third, we forget things that we already knew. all that stuff happens. And so that conversation does come up in workshops, because then these people are getting back into it. They're going, wow, you know, I haven't shot this much in a while and it feels great. And I really feel like I'm in a groove. So I started thinking about this, and I was thinking, what are the things that we can do to, you know, not have those long stretches, those long dry periods where we're not shooting very much? And believe it or not, this is something that I had to think about for me. And people goes, well, I mean, you shoot professionally. I do, but have you ever seen the graph that shows, you know, what the average week looks like for a professional photographer? And it shows all the different things that are happening. And the slice that has actually taking pictures is like super thin slice. Like if you were served a slice of cheesecake that thin in a restaurant, you would be upset. It's that small, okay? All this other stuff we have to do. So we have to be careful too, not to mention that, yes, we have families and we have other responsibilities also. So this really does apply, I think, in a lot of ways to everyone to some degree. Some folks have it rougher than others in terms of carving out time for their photography. But I think it's a challenge that all of us have, because I would think that most of us listening to this podcast would really prefer to be taking pictures most of the time and not doing a lot of the other stuff that we have to do. So what are some of the ways that we can keep that momentum going, even when it feels like the universe is kind of getting in our way in terms of photography? So I've got five for you here. That's right, five. I know you're shocked by that. Okay, so here we go. Don't rely too much on your smartphone. And I really think that this has become part of the equation. Yes, smartphones are convenient. They do take great pictures. But they also get us out of the habit of making real photography decisions. So for example, when I pull out my iPhone that I shoot with, which I shoot with a lot, I'm not really making photography decisions beyond composing. That I'm doing, composing, and maybe I'll tap and brighten or darken the image a bit, but that's about it. And then I hit the shutter. So it's some composition, maybe some exposure adjustment, and then, you know, tap the screen and off we go. So in terms of photography, like we were doing at the workshop this last weekend, that's not going to keep you sharp. You're not thinking about aperture because, first of all, the aperture is fixed on most smartphones. You're not really thinking about shutter speed. You're not really thinking about the different color modes or the different monotone modes as much. Although you could do some of that on the smartphone, we tend not to. You're not thinking about lens selection. You're not thinking about all sorts of stuff that you think about when you're working with your, what I call, traditional camera now. And a traditional camera really, to me, is anything that isn't a smartphone. So I think that relying too much on the smartphone can be one of those contributing factors for us falling out of the groove. And what I recommend is that when possible, carry a traditional camera with you as well. And that's one of the wonderful things about these great compact cameras and the mirrorless cameras, such as the Olympus Pen F that I was writing about today. They don't take up that much room. They're not that hard to bring along. And if you find yourself in a situation where you have a little bit of time, let's say on your way to work, on your way home from work, and you're a little ahead of schedule, you got 20 minutes, something interesting is happening, you get out of the car or you get off the bus or whatever it happens to be, and you have a real camera with you instead of your smartphone, and you can actually practice your photography. And if you capture something that you like, then you take it home and you do some post-processing. Now you're doing some post-processing. Suddenly you are in the middle of your photography workflow, and heaven forbid that you get something that you really like and you have a great shot, which is a bonus shot, right? Because all you had planned on doing that day was going to work, working, and coming home. And wouldn't you know it, you got a great photograph also. So not relying too much on the smartphone. The smartphone has its place just like all of our photography tools. But its place isn't to replace everything, at least not in my mind. So finding a way to have a traditional camera with you in your briefcase, in your backpack, you know, wherever you carry your other stuff, your laptop and all that, can really pay dividends when you get those unexpected photo opportunities and you can maximize them with what I'm calling a traditional camera. Next one, get more exercise outdoors. Gyms are great for shredding it, for sure. But they're not very good environments for photography, especially if you want to, you know, keep your gym membership. You start walking around the locker room with your camera and you will probably be uninvited from that gym, okay? Just saying, we all know this. And plus, there's really not that much to shoot in the gym anyway. However, if you get your exercise outside, you know, this is not replacing the gym completely, but I'm saying mixing it in. So I'm talking about walking. I'm talking about cycling. I'm talking about jogging. These outside exercises that put you in the environment where something photographic could happen. And I take a lot of shots running my errands on a bike. And I get shots sometimes doing my walks also. I do both walking and cycling. Those are my two outdoor exercises. And I'm amazed at how many good photos I get just doing my exercise. And these photos are particularly good for posting online with social and all that sort of stuff that really keep you in the flow with your community. Again, not relying solely on a smartphone while you're exercising outside can lead not only to good photo opportunities because you're exercising outside, but then maximizing them because you have a traditional camera with you. I think it's safe to say that most of us have some sort of high-quality compact camera that requires real photography settings, or that allows us, I should say, to use real photography settings. So get more exercise outside because not only do you get the exercise, you put yourself in position to have more photo opportunities, and the next thing you know what? You're going, I got another shot, and you're feeling like, hey, I'm still in a groove even though this is the middle of the work week. Secure photo time within family time. You don't want your photography to drive a wedge in your family life. That's a no-no, and believe me, I'm going to be the last person that would advocate anything like that. However, family time that's pure family time usually isn't good photography time. And in some ways, it really shouldn't be, right? You should be focusing on your family. Now, that doesn't mean you can't take great snapshots of the kids or each other or that kind of stuff. On family vacation, you can, you know, document it, all that. And that's all good. That's all good stuff. But that isn't the stuff that is your craft. That isn't your, you know, what we'll call serious photography. You don't want to put yourself in an either-or situation. What you want to do is balance family time with your serious photography time, just like you try to balance work and free time and try to balance work and family. It's another component. And for example, let's take the one-week vacation, the classic one-week vacation. Those are going to be coming up now because we're coming into summer up here in North America. So you're on a one-week vacation with the family. Carve out a few times, and I recommend doing this ahead of time, where you say, you know, I would like this morning to go shoot. I would like this twilight to go shoot. It seems like an opportune time because we're here. We're going to be in the hotel at 4 o'clock. That gives me a couple hours here and there. And set up some times where you, just by yourself, can go work on your photography. Then all the other stuff that you do with your family, that's great stuff, right? You still get to do the documenting and all this. But now you can actually research ahead of time, find some great spots, maybe go scout them a little bit with the family, and then come back at twilight, come back in the morning when the light's just right, come back at those times. So by setting those up ahead of time and by having everyone cool with it before you ever get in the car or you ever get on the plane, then it won't drive a wedge in your family life. And then you're not trying to do serious photography with your family standing right there being bored out of their skulls because dad is taking way too long to compose that shot. And it could be mom too, believe me. We have a lot of very talented moms show up at our workshops. So it could be either, for sure. So this is something that you want to negotiate, you want to work out. But I think it's very important to do that so that when you have these great opportunities, when you are somewhere, and it could be even a day at the beach with the family, maybe you can find a half an hour here to go off, say, I just want to take a walk with my camera, I want to go get some shots. Can you watch the kids? And then when I come back, you know, maybe you want to go stretch your legs and I'll watch the kids, something like that. Do that. Do that. Don't make it an all or nothing situation, and don't go for these really long stretches where you don't get to focus on your photography at all because you do have all these other interests and obligations. Spend time with other photographers. The exchange of views and ideas among photographers truly helps keep the creative juices flowing. Workshops, camera clubs, photo buddies, all of these situations encourage you to make time for shooting when you might have otherwise settled for another activity. And we know how that is. I mean, you've had a friend in the past, I'm sure, that was always saying, hey, come on, let's go do this, let's go do this. Didn't even have to be photography related. It could be anything. And you were thinking, oh, well, I'm probably just going to hang out on the couch tonight and watch some TV. This friend's getting in your grill and saying, no, no, come on, come with us. You do. You have a great time. And you wouldn't have done it had it not been for that friend or that situation encouraging you to make a change of plans. That's what workshops do for you. They get you out. You have them on the calendar. You're going to go and you're going to get some great shots. Camera club meetings, and photo buddies too, and especially you have a photo buddy that's very like-minded. I know a couple of great photo buddies, and I know that they keep each other going. They keep each other out shooting. They say, you know what? Every Friday, we're going to meet in the city, and we're going to go shooting for 2 hours. And that's what we're going to do. And that keeps you from not doing it, if you know what I mean. Free time, what little free time we have, that's one of those vacuum things that will get filled up quickly with other stuff if we're not mindful about what we want to put in that little bit of free space. Having photo buddies, going to workshops, setting up things on the calendar will help us stay in contact with other photographers so that not only can we keep the conversation going, but we can keep the interactions going. And they can help us stay motivated and we can help them stay motivated. Finally, number 5, create projects with deadlines. And this is one that has really helped me over the years, where you create a project. I started the film camera project almost a year and a half now. That project got me outside so many times shooting when I would have been doing something else. I promise you, I would have been doing something else. But I wanted to keep that project going. I said, you know what? I haven't recorded anything for a couple days. I'm really feeling like the project's starting to lag a bit. I need to get out there and do something. I get out there and do something and I get a shot. And then sometimes I get a really good shot, all because of that project. And then that project also helps you with the other areas of the workflow. Not only do you get out there and get a shot because you don't want to let this project, you know, start to fizzle. So then you're doing some image editing, you're doing some organizing, you're thinking about upcoming opportunities that may be perfect for what you want to do. Maybe you steal a bit of time after everyone settles down for the evening to work on your project. And you go, you know what, I'm just going to work on my project for an hour here before I go to bed. And it could be planning, it could be workflow, it could be just about anything, but if it's related to the project, it keeps those juices flowing. And then the thing that I've noticed is that if I go to bed after I've been doing something creative, let's say after I've been working for a half an hour, 45 minutes on my project, I go to bed with that stuff in my mind. That's good stuff, right? That's not stuff that's going to keep you up at night. That's good stuff. Get a good night's sleep. And then sometimes I wake up and I have a new idea that's related to it. It's almost like if I was thinking about it and pondering it before I went to bed, this good thing, this low stress thing, this fun thing, my mind just kind of kept playing with it and I wake up with a new idea. How nice is that? I think projects are a great way to gently blow on the embers of our good ideas and get little flames constantly shooting up and keep that fire burning. Keep that fire burning. So anyway, those are my five suggestions to help you not have these dry periods, not relying too much on your smartphone, get more exercise outside, secure photo time within family time, spend time with other photographers, and create projects with deadlines. We're artists, we're craftspeople, this is what we love to do, and these are some ways that enable us to do it while the rest of the world is doing its thing too. All right, this week's installment of the Me Photo Road Trip Air on Assignment. Well, it was at the workshop. Oh, it was so cool. It was so fun. So I brought my Road Trip Air to the workshop, and I did a little demo on the table, during these lab times that I talk about that are so much fun, where we're all sitting around the work table. I did my demo, and one of the participants who had flown in needed a tripod for the work that we're going to do at twilight that night. Mike Baining does a great job. He teaches this module at our workshops of twilight photography and long exposures and composites and all that sort of stuff. It's so fun. They just absolutely love it. And of course, when you're flying tripods, especially if you only have a big tripod, tripods aren't the easiest thing to lug across the country. So I lent him, it was Richard, I lent Richard my Me Photo Air, and I said, and I'm going to be really curious to see what you think about it. And after I did the demo, so he took it and he used it. He got some nice shots that night. And so then the next day, when he turned it back in, I asked him about it. And I said, so you know, I'm going to talk about this on the podcast, right? And he said, yes, I know that because I listened too. I said, okay, great. So tell me what you think. Give me something that I can use for the show. I want an impression. I want an impression of it. And he said, well, that's easy. He says, the impression is when you look at them, when you look at their pictures, they're really, you know, nice looking tripods and they have all these bright colors and everything. But what I didn't realize until I actually started using yours, which is just how well they're made. He says the machining on them is really nice. Even though they're light, they're solid. He says, you know, everything twists the way it's supposed to and locks down the way it should and all that kind of stuff. And he said, I was really impressed with the quality of the tripod. And I'm thinking when he's telling me this, I'm going, this is fabulous. This is fabulous. I haven't really addressed this yet. And it is something that is absolutely true. So the one thing that I want to say about this week's installment of the Me Photo Road Trip Air is that it is well made. It's high quality. Yes, there are pretty colors there. Yes, it doesn't weigh a whole lot. But this piece of equipment has some excellent machining behind it. And I think that is going to be one of the things that you would enjoy if you happened to get one for yourself. And if you do, make sure you use the coupon code THEDIGITALSTORY. That'll get you 10% off and you'll receive free shipping. And there are tiles on all the pages of the Digital Story. There's a Me Photo tripod tile. You can't miss it. Super colorful. Click on that. Shop around. Find one that you like. When you buy it, use the coupon code. Get the 10% off and the free shipping. Keep what I talked about today in mind as you start to operate the tripod and go, wow, this really is nicely made. Okay, before I sign off today, I just want to talk a little bit about the Olympus Pen F, because I shot with the Pen F and the OMD EM5 Mark II in San Francisco. And the reason why I had the two bodies with me all the time, I had them in my Think Tank Mirrorless Mover 25i, is that the weather was inclement some of the time. It was everything, actually. So I didn't want to be changing lenses a lot. So I put the longer lens on the EM5 Mark II. I actually put the 60mm f2.8 on there. I really like that lens. Plus, it's weatherproof, so I can have it out in the rain and not think about it. So that was my longer lens. And then I either had the 17mm f1.8 or the 14-42 easy zoom on the Pen F. So whatever I put on those cameras when I walked out the door, that's basically what I used for that next shoot. it worked out really well because not having to change lenses in bad weather is a really nice thing. So I would grab the EM5 Mark II if I wanted something with a little bit more reach, and then I'd use the Pen F for the close stuff. The Pen F was truly a joy to use, I tell you. And I wrote this article for the Digital Story. It's on there right now, and I have the link in the show notes, just like I have the link to everything else. And I talked about five things that really jumped out at me using the Pen F for this workshop. And one of them is that this cute little camera hanging around my neck, I would have it hanging around my neck. I usually use a wrist strap, but I had it hanging around my neck, didn't attract any attention or people didn't think about it. So I could be standing there right in front of somebody. I mean, literally like 3 feet away from them and take their picture. And I posted one of those shots with the article. This camera just it sort of makes you invisible. And I love that about the camera. And then I use that front knob a lot for both monotone and color work. So monotone profile number 2 and color profile number 3. I just love them both. And so monotone profile number 2 is like Tri-X. And then color profile 3 to me is, it's interesting. It's not like Velvia. It's very saturated. But it's saturated in the reds and yellows, more like Kodachrome. So it's like a saturated Kodachrome. And boy, I love that color profile. So I would shoot RAW plus JPEG. And then, of course, I'd have the RAW files. The profile would be applied to the JPEGs almost all the time. And most of the shots that I have shared so far that I captured with the Pen F are the JPEGs. Now, I capture them in super fine mode. You can set up the camera so that it does JPEGs full resolution in super fine mode, which means it has a fraction of the compression that some of the other settings have. The files are a little bit bigger, but it's really nice. You get literally two files for every shot, one with these cool profiles applied and the other one just the raw shot. So I love that. The other thing that I love, so I shoot with a cap a lot, and especially, you know, I guess all the time, right? Because it's either sunny weather or rainy weather. And since the viewfinder, the Pen F, is way over on the left side, and that's for street shootings. But the other thing that I like about it is that I can leave my cap on and shoot vertically, because all I do is that I put the viewfinder at the top of the camera. The camera isn't sticking up, pushing on my cap bill. The camera is instead below. And then I shoot vertically that way. It sounds like a small thing, except if you shoot with caps on, you know exactly what I'm saying. And that's also true for bicycle helmets, which are much more difficult to push up than caps. So having that viewfinder all the way on the left side is great for vertical shots too. It's a small thing, but it's a very cool thing. And then the images just look great. The viewfinder so crisp and clear. I tell you, it was a joy. And if you like urban photography and you like mirrorless cameras, I think the Pen F should be one of the cameras that you look at when you think about the next camera that you're going to buy, because it has a great lens lineup from both Panasonic and Olympus. I've just mentioned a few of the qualities that I really enjoyed this past weekend, and it makes great pictures and it feels good. It feels good to shoot with. So anyway, I just wanted to give a little recap on that since it was top of mind. Big thanks to all of our Patreon members, and we had a couple more sign up this week. This is nice, getting a few every week. I really appreciate that. It's very encouraging. And then the part where people are now coming up to me, or they're writing, or they're even tweeting, you know, I'm supporting the show through Patreon and it feels good and I'm very happy about it. I'm happy about that too. So thank you so much, both our new members to the Inner Circle and those that continually support this podcast. I wanted to let you know that probably reservation invites for the Fall Color Workshop in Wine Country, the TDS Autumn in Wine Country Workshop, probably going to send those out in the next week. So if you're not on the reserve list right now and you would like to join us for this workshop, this is going to be a fun workshop. We're going to be working in Sonoma County. We're going to be shooting Fall Color. And then we're also going to spend some time at some wineries. And if you enjoy wine tasting, and learning about wines and learning about, you know, the different varieties that happen up here in the North Bay. There's going to be some education around that. And then we're going to work in the morning. We're going to be shooting in the morning and doing our photography work. And then in the afternoon, if you have a spouse or a friend traveling with you, then they're invited to come to the winery with us. And you can share part of the workshop with your travel mate. And this is new. This is the first time I've tried this. I'm very excited about it. So if any of that sounds appealing to you and you'd like to become a part of it, or at least like to receive a reservation invite, then make sure that you go to the workshops page on the Digital Story, workshops right in the top nav bar. Use send me info and get on that reserve list before I send out the invites, because the first round of invites only goes to those folks. And since this is a new workshop, I have a feeling that space will fill up pretty quickly. We talked about printing at the workshop, and one of our participants, Larry, really kind of got this cool sort of artistic in-camera technique going, combination of using multiple pictures and multiple exposures. And I said, you know what? Those would make the sharpest looking fine art cards in the world. When you make some, because he prints, when you make some, will you send them to me, and I'm going to use them for my printing talk in out of Chicago, because I'm doing a creative printing talk there. And he said that he'd absolutely do that. And a tip came up, by the way, and I know this is on the sheets that come packed with Red River paper, but Larry was talking. He said he had one print where it looked like there were some specks on it. If you have a large sheet of paper, and especially some of the paper that's fiber-based, make sure that you dust off the paper or shake off the paper. You know, you can just shake it before you run it through the printer. Sometimes there might be, it is paper, and sometimes there might be a little paper dust on there. And then that will prevent that dust from interfering with the printing process. So that was a little tip that came up while we're talking about printing at the workshop. I thought you'd appreciate it. Big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting the site and for supporting all the things that we do, and also providing us with some really great paper for our printing. That's enough for now. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you come back and join me next week. I'm working on some cool stuff. Look forward to being with you again then next week. Until then, think about some of these tips for keeping your photography going. It's all about momentum. It's all about practice. And it's all about making great shots. Until next week, bye-bye now.